Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Davy Jones of rum
and gold and wenches bold.
And your last Bill Billy Bones. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Welcome, welcome. Good morning to you, Billy Bones.
Good morning to you, Johnny Bones.
Anyway, I'm in a mood to sing Billy Bones lyrics by Skip Henderson. The nautical man within me is rising up because I've had enough of unions and teachers, blogs, communist presidents. So let me start at the top. What's going on in Wisconsin right now is very important. What is going on in Wisconsin right now? That's so very important. The people got tired of the communist socialists who are running Wisconsin. They threw them out and they put in a Republican governor. The Republican governor came in. His name is Walker. And he introduces a new budget. And he says, we got to repair the budget because we're going broke. And what he says we have to do is simple. We have to require state employees to pay about 5.8% toward their pension, which is about half the private, which is about equal to the private sector national average. They want teachers to pay 5.8% towards their pension, and he wants them to pay about 12% of their health care benefits, which is about 50% of the private sector national average. And this should help the state become a little more balanced fiscally. What happened is the teachers' unions, as funded by Obama and the Democrat National Committee, bust students out of school, which is totally illegal, to start rioting in the state capitol. The teachers went on strike. And shockingly, the Democrat lawmakers in Wisconsin left the state. They're hiding somewhere in a motel in an adjacent state. They refuse to even vote. And that is because there's a quorum necessary to pass a law. And they need one additional person. All the Republicans are for this law. They need one Democrat to show up to vote with them to have a quorum. So they're hiding. They've left the state. Now, the governor has the authority to arrest all of the teachers and fire all of them. I would fire all of the teachers immediately. That's the first thing I would do. And by the way, I'm a former teacher. I'm also a former member of the AF, I forget the name of the union, the UFT, the AFT. I don't know, the teachers' unions, whatever. I've been a member of a radio union at one point. I've had mixed results with unions, I want to tell you this. And I'm fairly knowledgeable about unions. There was a time in this country when unions were important. Way back in the beginning, in the 20s, there was certainly a need for unions because workers were exploited. They are not exploited anymore. Most workers, for example, for states and for the federal government, earn far more than people do in the private sector. That's number one. Number two, the pensions and the health care benefits are so out of proportion with reality that they're bankrupting states, localities, and the federal government itself. Now, you would think this is common sense, wouldn't you? It would be unless you're a community organizer with big ears who doesn't know what the hell he's doing, but has gotten away with virtually anything he's wanted to do because people are afraid to say that the guy is King Ludwig II of our time. The whole world is on fire from this revolutionary in the White House. The man has set the world on fire, in case you know what that means. The world is burning. He started a slow fire around the world, and now it's burning here in America. Now, having laid the groundwork for what I'm about to say about unions, I want to talk about something else because it's bigger than unions, it's bigger than teachers, it's bigger than the headlines of the day, and that is the implicit brotherhood of all men, the sacredness of every human personality. I believe in those things. I believe in decency. I believe in morality. I believe in spirituality. And in fact, As I tried to explain to you yesterday on the Savage Nation, Christianity is such an advanced religion that, in fact, the only hope for the world is if more people truly understood the teachings of Jesus. I know you find this very hard to understand because people say, well, I don't believe in religion. I don't want to worship anybody. I don't want to go to church. I don't want to go to temple. And I say to them, you don't have to go to church or temple to understand the meaning of the teachings of Jesus, because his suffering was a universal suffering. And that message, if it's actually understood by all people, would diminish human suffering around the planet. You take the most evil person on earth, if they could be reached at all, unless their souls are not there at all. And there are people, I believe, without souls. And I don't want to get too esoteric or spiritual right now, because we're going to go back to the union riots that are going on in Wisconsin in a minute. I want to say again, there is a respect in me for man as man, number one. There's a respect in me for the brotherhood of all men, the decency of all men. But we have to work together. Do you understand that? And to simply say that the governor of Wisconsin is an evil man because he wants to take away collective bargaining rights of teachers. He's an evil man because he wants to force teachers to pay 5.8% of their salaries towards their pension, and about 12% of their health care benefits should be paid for by themselves. He's an evil man, and they have lost their rights. It's all rubbish. Unless the American people come to understand that the party is over, unless the people in this country come to understand that unions have destroyed businesses across this country, unless the American people come to understand the reason we lost the auto industry is because of union benefits and union wages, compared with other nations where people make a decent wage, but they don't make an exorbitant wage. They make a wage equal to what they're actually doing, and therefore the auto manufacturer is going to those countries, not to Detroit. The reason Detroit is hollowed out is because the unions destroyed Detroit. And the reason the teachers are rioting right now is because nobody wants to give up a dime out of their own pocket. I understand that. You think I like paying as much taxes as I pay to support the deadbeat bums in this country and pay for health care for criminals across America? I don't like it at all. You think I like paying for the corruption in the U.S. government? You think I like paying for Obama's flying around on Air Force One to go raise money on his behalf instead of on behalf of America? I don't like it at all. But I pay every cent. I pay retail on my taxes. So nobody likes to pay any more than they have to. The question is, what are we going to do about it? So we have some Republican fiscally conservative governors who are saying, here's what we're going to do about it. You're going to pay a little bit more than you're paying. You're going to pay something, rather, towards your pension and your health care, and they're rioting. And who is behind it? We found out just minutes ago that behind the rioting in Wisconsin, behind bringing children out of school, by the way, which to me is a shock, that parents would let their children be used like stooges and be brought to the Wisconsin Capitol. It's a shock for me to see this. We found out just hours ago that the Democratic National Committee has an arm called the Organizing for America arm, OA, I think it's called. They are actually behind the bullying and the rallies in Madison, Wisconsin. They also bussed people in. They filled buses with children and with teachers. They also created phone banks urging people to call their state legislators. And, of course, it is, again, the Democrats who are behind this, because it's Obama who's behind the Democrats. Remember that. And they're trying to paint Governor Walker in Wisconsin as some kind of evil man. Under this plan, teachers, public employees such as park rangers, teachers, and prison guards will have to pay a portion of their money for their health care and for their pension, and they will lose the right to join unions, which are fundamentally dictatorships. If you're against dictatorships, how can you be for a union, which is a dictatorship, is what I'd like to know. And so I'd like to ask you, whether you're an employee of a state somewhere in America, who do you think is going to pay your pension, and who is going to pay for your health care if not you? You have to pay a part of it. Who do you think pays for my health care and my pension? I do. Any company in America knows that this is what's required, is that people have to contribute towards their own benefits, or else it's not going to happen. That's an important topic because we see union thugs in Wisconsin descending on the state capitol, bussing children in to protest the idea that they should have to contribute to their own pension and health care plans. So I shall ask you a simple question. Should state workers pay any percentage of their health care and pensions? Now, here's another story for those of you interested in what Obama, the revolutionary, is doing to Israel. If this is of any importance to you at all, I don't think it is anymore. I don't think people care anymore about what Obama does. Do you know that he's the first president in American history to join the Arab bloc in attacking Israel in the UN? Now, all these years that Israel was attacked and singled out by the Arab countries, it was always two nations that said no. It was usually the U.S. and Israel that overruled the Security Council. But do you know that the United States is now going to attack Israel in the United Nations Security Council over so-called settlements in the so-called West Bank? Doesn't this once and all prove to you, whether you're a Jew or not, that Obama is a Muslim sympathizer or worse? What the heck kind of message does this send at a time when revolts fueled by anti-Israel, anti-Jewish factions are taking place across the Middle East? These are some of the topics I want to talk about today on The Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We have a president who is bypassing the American media. He is using only, I think you even saw some complaints last week from CBS. It was ABC, rather. Even the midstream media, as bad as they are, in the pocket as they are of the Democrats, as leftist as they are suddenly saying, oh my God, Obama and his gang are bypassing the media, and they're setting up, reaching the American people through Twitter and through Facebook and through alternative media. They're bypassing us completely. And so we now have a dictator in the White House. As I said to you, right now he's still Junior Doc. But very soon, unless this man is found out for what he is, primarily by Democrats, because I would say most sane people over the age of 18 know who Obama is by now, unless this man is found out and exposed for what he is, we're going to have an outright Papa Doc in this country. I'll be right back. So the corrupt Democrat Party is busing children into Wisconsin because the governor wants to tighten the belt of teachers and others. And while that's going on, the man behind it all, the revolutionary in the White House, the meddler, the imposter, Obama, has flown into the San Francisco Bay Area to meet with the heads of the high-tech industry. On the list of his dinner tonight will be, some of them you would know, some of them you wouldn't know, Carol Bartz, president and CEO of Yahoo; John Chambers, CEO and chairman of Cisco Systems; Dick Costolo, CEO of Twitter; Larry Ellison, co-founder and CEO of Oracle; Reed Hastings, CEO of Netflix; John Hennessy, president of Stanford University; Steve Jobs, chairman and CEO of Apple; Art Levinson, chairman and former CEO of Genentech; Eric Schmidt, chairman and CEO of Google; and Mark Zuckerberg, founder and president and CEO of Facebook. So some of the top people in the high-tech area, mainly in the social networking area, if you want to put it in that generic term, are meeting with the revolutionary. No doubt they're going to be shaken down for millions of dollars for obvious favors that they're going to get, and God knows, maybe permitting them out of Obamacare for their companies. You know, they're all for you paying, not for them. Why are they all in one place? There's only one reason for them to be in one place. You'd think all of these so-called innovators would shy away from meeting with the president, but they all want to be there. There's something that they want, right? What are they looking for? Obviously, CEOs are looking for tax breaks. And the dinner will go this way. Give us tax breaks. Obama will say, okay. The CEOs will say, how much does it cost? Obama will say, you're welcome. So that's what's going on in the San Francisco Bay Area right now. And they will create a million new jobs, no doubt, over the next few years. They will go to China. They will go to China. They will not go to the United States of America. So nothing really changes. It doesn't matter who's in the White House. So we can talk about the White House, for example, because that's what's the reason we're talking about Wisconsin. Why do you think the governor did this? I don't think you're really interested in this, really. I mean, I could play stuff that you'd be interested in. I don't think people are interested in this dry stuff, to be honest with you. I know you're not. I know you're not interested in Israel anymore. I knew that. I have a very good instinct about it. If you woke up tomorrow and read that Obama said Israel should disappear from the planet, you'd probably go about brushing your teeth and seeing who you can contact on Twitter. Or if he said, we're giving Taiwan to China, you'd probably brush your teeth and go on to Twitter and see who you can go out to dinner with tonight or who you could hook up with. You know, it's not, I got to be honest with you. I know that I'm from another generation, and maybe I care too much about certain things. I'm not going to apologize for it, but I was discussing this last night with someone, and I said, don't you know that the world that we grew up in is no longer here? We grew up in a different world than the world that we're living in today. It's a different universe. Obama's not from our world. Obama's from a much more, shall I say, nihilistic, atheistic world where there's no loyalty to any nation, no loyalty to the concept of nationhood. In fact, no loyalty to the concept of decency, in my opinion. And I said many of the things we grew up on no longer exist. Duty, loyalty, honor to your own family, to yourself, starting with yourself. Do you have a duty to yourself? Do you have honor to yourself? Do you have loyalty to yourself? How about your family? How about duty, honor, and loyalty to something bigger than yourself, something beyond the family? Very little of this goes beyond anyone who's younger than 50, in my estimation. Some have it, but most don't. I think most people are living on their id. They're running on pure id fumes right now. And I don't think that the world that I live in is really the world that the general American public truthfully shares in. And I'm not apologizing for it, nor am I trying to marginalize myself. And in a way, maybe I'm trying to explain why I care about these issues that I care about. And so having said that, I still have millions of listeners because they are either from my generation or they're a little younger than me or they think the way I do or they'd like to know how I think and try to figure out who's right, me or the atheistic, nihilistic people who follow people like Obama, et cetera. I mean, I'm trying to put this in context for you. I'm feeling my way through this as I discuss it with you. And I think it's a very big discussion, which is the world I grew up in, the world I believed in, no longer exists. It wasn't all destroyed by Obama. I would say it started, the destruction of the world I live in was started by Bill Clinton. And it went downhill rapidly after Bill Clinton. Bush certainly was a continuation of Clinton. Bush built up a bigger government in one generation, in one administration, than all previous administrations.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to Michael Savage and look at what I put up on my... Some of the headlines I wrote. Okay, here's one. On the right side from Foreign Policy. Obama joins Palestinian attacks on Israel and the UN. You don't care. Top left. Police hunt Dems who skipped vote to curtail union rights. You don't care. Next article from the Wall Street Journal. Major Hassan, star officer. Do you know what that's about? The Muslim major who slaughtered 13 and injured 40 is not even identified as a Muslim in any of the reports thus far put out by the military. It's beyond comprehension who's running this country. Everywhere I turn, I feel as though I'm living in the ex-Soviet Union, where there's been a complete and total purging of every branch of the military, every branch of the intelligence services. We have been purged of the patriots who should defend us. It's as though, to put this on an immunological level, it's as though we look inside a human body and we find out that every defense cell has been neutralized. Every defense cell has been neutralized. Every macrophage, every white blood cell neutralized by some toxin that has entered the body, and we're going to die of cancer. We're going to die of cancer because every aspect of this country's political system has been completely purged of the defense cells that once gave us the ability to sleep at night. So the Wall Street Journal has the article, Major Hassan, star officer. Nidal Hassan, by the way, has still not yet been tried for the murder. Did you know that? While we have soldiers rotting in Fort Leavenworth in cells built during the Civil War, Major Hassan is given three halal meals a day and a prayer rug. It's beyond comprehension. You got to read this article. It's on my website. It's shocking. I don't know how these people in the military get up in the morning and face themselves unless they're all on drugs. That's the only thing I can figure out is they're all medicated. The leaders of the FBI, CIA, military leaders, they seem all to be on drugs. It's frightening. Every branch of the military has issued a final report on the Fort Hood massacre. Not a single one mentioned radical Islam. Now, on the right, unrest in Mideast and North Africa, country by country. Great article. From the AP, Obama forces Marines to undergo gay training. Take a look at that article, what the revolutionary meddler has done. Now, here's the one about the Wisconsin just came out. Here's a kid saying, we really have little idea why our teachers brought us here to protest some dude. The unions bust in students to put forward a friendlier, less thuggish face than union protests tend to have, and the kids don't even know why they're there. These are some of the articles. Here's another one. Soros team wants Al-Qaeda in government. It's endless. You know, when you look at this, what's going on since the meddler arrived in the White House, the imposter. Since the imposter arrived in the White House, the world is burning. The country is melting down. The world is burning. We're bankrupt. And he continues to fiddle. You could say Nero fiddled while Rome burned. You could say it's like a King Ludwig II who kept building Schloss Herrenchiemsee in the lakes of Austria. I believe it was Austria. No, Bavaria, the lakes of Bavaria. Bankrupting the Bavarian treasury. He was trying to duplicate if I remember correctly, the Hall of Mirrors in the Palace of Versailles. He was a 19 or 18-year-old king, inherited the throne. He was even younger, maybe. And instead of trying to manage the economy and manage the government of Bavaria, King Ludwig II, who I was once very interested in when I was 18 years old, bankrupted the treasury through his grandiose concepts of rebuilding the Palace of Versailles in his own country. And this is what Obama and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid have done to America. And so I wake up every day and I say it's as though a group of brainwashed children have taken over America. And no matter what the people say, no matter what the people do, no matter what goes on, they will continue on their destructive path like a scythe, wiping out every vestige of decency in the United States of America, bankrupting every state, bankrupting every municipality, bankrupting every citizen if they have to continue to push forward their childish agenda. And at the same time, they're setting the world afire with their idiotic notion of bring democracy to the world, get rid of the dictators. Well, you got rid of Mubarak, and who's waiting in the wings? The Muslim Brotherhood, as we told you. You see, it doesn't always work out, boys and girls, the way you were taught in the wobbly classes that you took at your Berkeley high schools around America. All right, I'm going to take your calls. I've laid out a couple of stories. There's another one on my website I want to point out. It hasn't made anyone else's website. Even Matt missed it. Matt, you're asleep. No, there's a good picture I have up on my website. On the bottom left, above Savage Rating Soaring, it's a picture of snow in San Francisco in 1882. It snowed in San Francisco before Carr invented, I wrote. And what I meant by that was to show you that we had strange weather patterns long before the automobile even arrived on the scenes and started to produce carbon dioxide. Ooh, isn't that carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide? Well, we don't even know what kind of carbon comes out of a car, but it's all bad, you know. We learned it's bad and businesses are bad. We don't know monoxide from oxide, from dioxide, from peroxide, but we don't want cars, man. It's pollution. Well, if you look at the pictures there, I love archival photos. And it shows records of amounts of snow falling in significant amounts in San Francisco going back to 1882, long before the polluting automobile arrived on the scene and ruined the perfect hippie city by the bay. So huge snowfalls in San Francisco, 1882, 1887. I think that was before Henry Ford was even a glint. 1951, 62, and 76. And they're interesting, beautiful pictures, if you want to look at them. And what does it tell you? It tells you an awful lot. But, of course, it would require the ability to have deductive or inductive logic. It would require the ability to think. It would require the ability to have gone to school when I did in the 1950s, where it was drilled into me to think for myself and answer my own questions, where teachers wouldn't give you the answer. In fact, if they would never think of giving you the answer. They made you come up with the answer. All of my studies as a child, whether it was in algebra even, I was taught to come to conclusions on my own using logic. Now take a look at what we have instead. We have drug children who are taught not to think because it's painful and evil, to just listen and repeat and regurgitate like a Gerber's baby eating tofu that was left out in the sun. Washington, D.C., Charlie, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, how are you? I am the child of Holocaust survivors, and the lesson that was drilled into me by my parents was the world will always show a Jew who a Jew is. And Obama is going to show all the Jews who the Jews are and that they are second-class citizens along with the Christians in this country.
But, Charlie, why does he get away with it? Why is every rabbi in America not going to the pulpit Saturday morning and railing against what Obama's doing? What is that? Is that a special dish?
Yeah, it's a special Yiddish, Polish Yiddish.
I'm joking. So, I said, is it a special dish? I was joking. I know what it is.
Yeah.
But it's a family show, and we can't say what it is. But so what is going to happen now that Obama's voting against Israel in the Security Council for the first time in the American presidency? Tell me what's going to happen.
I have no idea. It tears me up. It tears me up inside. As a former Marine, it tears me up.
Charlie, am I the only talk show host who gives a rat's behind about Israel?
No, actually, you don't. There's one out of Baltimore by the name of Tom Maher in the Morning who is just as supportive and just as vociferous.
Well, right, I understand, but there was a time in America that most people supported Israel. When did they suddenly shift to the Arab side? When did that happen in this country?
Because they became too politically correct. And like you said, liberalism is a mental disorder. I have an aunt who's a Holocaust survivor who is the biggest champion. I cannot understand why.
Do you try to tell her what he's doing, for example, because she's not alone? Do you try to tell her what he's just done to Israel? Would she listen to you?
I have tried. It's like talking to the wall.
Yes. See, that's the thing. Liberalism is a mental disorder. There's no way to tell them. No matter what you say to them, no matter what evidence you give them, they'll say, brother, I don't know. Whatever you're saying doesn't make sense. He's a good Democrat. He's a good man. He's on our side. Not those evil guy Republicans.
Yeah, she fell, but it killed me. It absolutely killed me.
You think I don't know? You think I don't know the mentality of these people? You think I don't throw up from it every day? You think I don't encounter it? I don't encounter it anymore. I ran away from it. Why do you think I left New York 40 years ago?
I understand, but I just want you to keep on doing the good work, Michael. Thank you.
I'm trying my best. That's why I don't even go to my house in Florida. I can't take it anymore. I just can't take this mentality. Let's put it to you that way. Because you say these people. What do you mean these people? What do you mean by these people? Okay, I made my point. Snow in San Francisco, right. So Obama is out here raising money from the people in the high-tech industry. And he's going to shake them down for money, and they're going to give him the money, and then they'll send their jobs over to China. And, of course, they'll get tax benefits from that. Here we are in the United States of America, year 2011. All you care about is a cannabis bill, the right to smoke marijuana and be stupider than you already are. There's a reason they call it dope. Hey, dope, why do you think they call it dope? Dope, you know why they call it dope? There's a reason that they call it dope. Mike in Wisconsin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, this Wisconsin craziness is now affecting me. My four kids have just been told they won't have school tomorrow because 103 teachers decided to break their contract and walk off in freedom, which is kind of ironic. And then now I got called and put on notice that I might have to be a prison guard because I'm an Air National Guard member in Wisconsin.
Oh, my God. They're using Air National Guard in the prisons because they're on strike?
Well, it's if they walk off. They have not walked off yet.
They got it pretty good, the prison guards. What are they complaining about? They get to torture prisoners. They got a big pension. They can act out all their sadism. What more do they want?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I understand. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. It's a weird profession, prison guard. It's a very weird profession, anyone who would take that job. It's a very okay, on one hand, who would want the job? Unless they had a good pension, who would want to be locked up with prisoners all day? On the other hand, I've watched enough of these inside the lockup. I start to root for the prisoners at a certain point. It's terrible. And no matter how vicious the prisoner is, I start to sympathize with them when I see some distorted small woman who's a bully of the lowest order, someone who looks like she would have been happy in Auschwitz, beating people up and throwing them into an oven, telling these big strapping men, "Now you don't disrespect me there, Johnson. Get back in that cage. Or we're going to take away the Colgate toothpaste that we give you once a year." I mean, which side would you be on? It's sadism. It's sadism. I've never seen anything like it. At least that's one side. Then there's the other side. It's crazy. The whole thing's mixed up. You can't come out. You know, it's very hard to come out the other side where there's one simple answer to anything anymore. That's the absolute truth. It's a very ambiguous world in so many areas. But in some areas, there's no ambiguity. Okay? In other areas, it's quite ambiguous. Many, many situations are quite ambiguous, which is why I told you I started the show today trying to put it in context. You got to remember, I'm a former school teacher. I started as a social worker out of college. Do you know that? I, Michael, was a social worker on New York's Upper West Side. And what I saw going on amongst the welfare recipients made me quit the welfare department. I saw rip-off artists one after the other. They were living better than me. I told you the story, what happened. I was making something like $5,200 a year when I first came out of college. It's a long time ago. And I lived in a rental apartment in Flushing, New York. And I had no furniture. I couldn't afford furniture. So what did I do? Big deal. I got soap boxes for tables. We threw a mattress on the floor. We put lamps on a box. Big deal. We didn't care. We were young. You know how people are. You know, figure eventually you'll work your way up in society. So then I'm a welfare worker, right? So my supervisor will go see Mr. Smith. I'll give him a name. It wasn't Mr. Smith. Huh? Go up to the Upper West Side and go visit Mr. Smith. Yeah, I go to Mr. Smith and then Mrs. This, Mrs. That. And I come back and she's, all right, get out the bill. Okay, Mr. Smith is living in an apartment. He needs a coffee table, write down $225. He needs two end tables, write down $392. He needs a bed. He needs two lamps. He needs a this. He needs a... So I had to write him a check for $6,500 for furniture, if I'm not mistaken. I said, wait a minute. I make $5,200 a year. You're asking me to write a check from the Department of Welfare in the city of New York to him for $6,000 so he can buy furniture? She said, well, yes. She said, even the poor are supposed to have dignity. I said, wait a minute, I don't have dignity. I'm living on a floor, on a mattress, and I work here. She said, well, don't give me that, she said, Michael. She said, write that check or I'm going to fire you. I think that was the day I became a conservative. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Bothering me is I sent in that genetic test kit about 4 months ago. They haven't answered me yet. You know, I told you, like, you send in money and you spit in the tube. Tells you if you're subject to various diseases and where your genetics come from. I'm so angry at that company. Going to hear from me. They really are going to hear from me. They ripped me off. I'll go to the Better Business Bureau. No, because I'm curious. You know what I mean? I want to know, like, true. They used to tell me when I was a little boy. I'm not going through a second childhood. I'm so bored of the politics of the day. We have a revolutionary in the office of the White House, and no one cares in the country. Well, a few do. The man's a communist, an outright communist. Then you got the quisling fake conservatives. Some guy named Reb Bev or something. Used to be a movie critic, then made believe he was a conservative. He's a political cross-dresser. Attacks me, attacks Laura Ingraham, because we know what he is. He comes out and says Obama's not out to destroy America, you hear? I guess he wants to get invited to the White House with Steve Jobs. U.S. Energy Lab missing cocaine and amphetamine samples. You hear this story just came out minutes ago? Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory failed to properly track cocaine, amphetamines, opium, and black tar heroin that its so-called uses for biomedical research and other purposes. Yeah, research. Yeah, sure. Believe me, I was in the science racket for a while. Yeah, we need send in some of that cocaine. We need it for some research. Them rats are craving it. I mean, we need to test the rats with it. Well, what do you need black tar heroin for? Well, we got to test it to see the addictive qualities in a red heron. Yeah. What they need this garbage for, cocaine, it's missing now. Properly track. Some drugs were missing while opium and black tar heroin found in greater amounts than lab records showed were purchased. Listen to this. Some drugs were missing while opium and black tar heroin were found in greater amounts than lab records showed were purchased legally. So you would conclude, therefore, they were purchased illegally. Then why are they in the lab? Now, this is the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. You hear? What are their pensions like? I wonder what the pensions are for the so-called scientists there. Also references additional shipments of cocaine hydrochloride, but it was unclear if those shipments ever arrived. I think they were diverted to a house in Oakland, probably. New York, WOR. Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. You know, what in the world? How do you do it? How do you get up every day and talk to this audience out here that nobody cares? How do you do it, Michael?
I don't know. No, I'm reaching a point of no return. I'm getting beaten up by it. I feel a sense of apathy in America like I've never felt in all my 16 years in radio. It's not just me. I feel it, Tom. I look at what Obama's doing. He's burning the world down. He's burning down everything decent in America. He has turned this country upside down for the worse, not for the better. He has set the Middle East on fire. He's shafted every ally we ever had. He's disloyal to every ally we've ever had. And the man gets away with it, and the people don't seem to care. How does this go on every day?
Michael, you know, I don't know if there's any connection between the fact that yesterday it was like a trial balloon they tested, they floated over the airwaves about how the Obama administration wants to have control of the Internet to turn it on and off, and then they talk about this meeting tonight in San Francisco. What's going on, buddy?
What's going on is that the Google company was involved directly in the Egyptian uprising. The Google company is probably the most dangerous company in the United States, if not in the world. And he is meeting with the people who control the social networks as well. And so, therefore, he's conducting a coup via the Internet. He's meeting with those who control the Internet in order to control the people.
Unbelievable.
So you say, no, Tom, in other words, this is interesting. Your call is interesting to me. I don't want to milk it, but I have a question for you. You in other words, you're saying, how do I do it, right, is what you're asking?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I don't know how I do it. I'm trying to understand why I do it. The question is why I do it, not how I do it. You know what I mean, Tom?
Yes.
In other words, what do I do it for? My guts out with glass for. I go out, I see people who don't give a damn about anything. People my age, younger, eating, drinking like it's Pompeii. And the volcano will never explode. You know what I'm saying? The ash is falling all around them, and they don't even know Pompeii blew up already. Party on, and the band played on. We're on the rear deck of the ship with the band playing on.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Some yin energy on the Savage Nation. Powerful female energy since the men are dead in America. The only men who are alive are in Afghanistan fighting for the country. And maybe some tax squads in the United States of America. And guys in the MMA, mixed martial arts. Other than that, the men are dead in the United States of America. Come on, I want to hear that female energy. Stop it. Loud! So it's raining like heck out here in the San Francisco area. Now, the reason you should care, turn it off now already. I made my point. I got there at 10. It was hailing out here, and the reason you should care is it means in 2 or 3 days you're going to get walloped on the East Coast again. And as you well know, if you're a college student, you're sure that this cold weather and snow is caused by global warming, even though you don't understand it at all, because Al Gorleone and the other goons in the so-called scientific disestablishment have taught you that it's caused by, you see, the Earth is so upset by the carbon that it gets mixed up and it creates snow in the winter. We don't know exactly how. It's caused by some kind of carbon some oxide. Well, sir, is it dioxide, trioxide, or bioxide? It's carbon some oxide. Carbon's bad. Well, can you explain what carbon is, sir? I don't know what it is. It was in a pencil that I used years ago. I heard it's very bad for you. It's in the back of a tailpipe. And I need my medical marijuana. I don't feel good. I want some government marijuana. So that's the world I live in. So I think what I'm going to do instead of... I told you what's going on. See, I'd like to wake up tomorrow and see that Israel blew the warships out of the Suez Canal. That's all. I want to wake up once and see somebody in the democratic world do something. Once! I want to see Israel destroy the Iranian warships in the Suez Canal, blow them out of the water, kill everybody on the ships. I want to see somebody kill the pirates and blow up their pirate skiffs. Once I'd like to see this country do something decent under this despot that we have in the White House. But it's not going to happen. He set the world on fire. You just got to see Marlon Brando's old movie Burn to know who Obama is. He's setting the sugar fields on fire, to put it in that context. So since you don't want to talk about carbon monoxide or the meddler in the White House or Israel, and the apathy in America now is at an all-time high because of the psychotic revolutionaries that are running the country, I think what I'm going to do is going to put on the life coach hat. Remember I did that last week? It was very popular. I told you there's a new trend where people are bypassing state licensing and they're becoming what's known as coaches. People who are such idiots who would pay them, I don't understand it, but it's a big trend. Apparently they charge a fortune. You call them up like you have a trip to, you're going away this weekend for President's Weekend with your children, and you can't stand your husband, for example, and you really hate your children, you don't want to be with them, and you're feeling conflicted about going anywhere with them, skiing, you don't want to be in the room with them. The thought of it is giving you claustrophobia and hives, but you're afraid to tell anybody because they'll think that you're a bad person, so you don't know who to turn to. You're afraid to even turn to a psychiatrist for fear they'll turn you into the state. So you're going to a life coach. You're paying them $300 an hour. So an hour before you get in the car, wherever you're going to go to, like the Poconos to go skiing, you call Roberta Life Coach, and she tells you, don't worry, it'll be okay. Just take some pills and drink. And you say, I feel much better. So I'm going to be Life Coach Mike now for the next segment on the Savage Nation. If you have a life problem that you would like answered, give me a ring at 1-800-449-8255. If you're lucky enough to get on the show, you're going to get thousands of dollars of advice for nothing. For 2 cents plain, you're going to get it. I'm serious. You know how good I am at this because I have common sense. There's one thing Donald Trump said about me that I liked. It's the only thing he said about me that I liked because the only thing he ever said about me is I was at Mar-a-Lago. Someone invited me to a lunch there. It was a very nice lunch. And Donald Trump arrived on the scene and everyone clustered around him because he's the king. It's his place. And he runs a great place, by the way, so I don't know how he looked over at me and he almost like benighted me with like a wand, a mental wand. He said, Michael Savage, you've got common sense. You go beyond politics, he said. You've got common sense. You could literally feel the crowd go, ooh, you know what I'm saying? And all the billionaires started to cluster around me. They wanted to walk with me into the dining room after that. It was safe to be with Michael Savage because I had common sense. I was no longer a political outcast. So why don't you try my common sense? If you've got a problem or you want to talk, if you really rather talk about the news, go ahead. I've thrown out 100 news stories. You don't seem to care about Wisconsin and that Obama sent out the buses and the rent-a-children. Like some dude, that's the governor, who is simply asking the teachers and other employees to pay 5.8% of their salary toward their own pension, which is about the private sector national average, and about 12% of the health care benefits should be paid by them, which is about half the private sector national average. And, of course, the union goons are saying that he's a Nazi and Hitler because he wants to balance the budget. New York, first call on Dr. Mike. Peter on WOR, thank you for calling. There's the Dr. Mike hat is on. What's on your mind?
Dr. Mike, how are you, sir?
Yeah, what's on you? What's your question for the life coach?
This is my problem, Dr. Mike. I was a city teacher, and I had to leave the profession because of the liberals. That I was surrounded by the liberals making excuses for the current nanny state that we have in New York. I don't know if you know, but they're trying to ban smoking even in public places, outdoors.
Oh, yeah, they banned it in the and they banned it in prisons so that they would be, listen to this. The poor guys are locked up for X years of their life, so they ban smoking in prisons, and guess what they put them on? Medication instead of cigarettes. And take a guess who benefits from putting these prisoners on medication. The drug companies. Okay, so anyway, so what's the question?
Well, also, right now there's a budget issue with Mayor Bloomberg, and he wants to lay off teachers. I left the profession, but he's trying to lay off teachers. And
so you and took an early buyout. So what's the question? You did already what you had to do.
Right. Well, my question was, how do I deal? Because when I explain to liberals, because You know how combative and miserable they are in general.
Oh, miserable human beings.
They are.
Miserable. All of them grew up hating the world. They had miserable parents with oilcloth underneath it, and they taught them that America's no good, capitalism is evil, all businessmen are thieves, everything is bad. Then they sent them to camps in the Poconos on some union camp for red diaper dopa baby children, and they turned out to be horrendous women and men. See, what do you want to know, how to deal with them?
Sometimes I just need to know, I mean, do I count to 10? What do I do? Because I just...
Well, you do the way I did, move out of New York. Well, that doesn't help because I'm in a worse city than New York. You see, New York's actually a better city than San Francisco because you have such a large population that you might encounter a sane person. One out of five might be sane. Four out of five are psychotic liberals, but one out of five might be a patriotic American. San Francisco, it's 10 out of nine are psychotic. So I become a hermit and just talk to my dog and ride my bicycle and do my radio show and write my books. What else is there to do? You know how I approach life now, Peter? Honest to God, people will disappoint you no matter what their politics are. The truth is that it's the fault of the apple. You know what I'm saying? It's the fault of the apple. The crystal is blemished. There's no perfection on earth. And if you're going to look for happiness through people, you're never going to find it. If you look for happiness in yourself, you're never going to find it. The trick is to stop looking for happiness. If you're eating and you don't have cancer or a disease and no one in your family has been struck by lightning, so to speak, consider yourself a lucky man. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm very happy. I'm a very happy person, and that's what I think they don't like.
Oh, they want to know why you're happy.
Yes.
They want to steal your joy.
Yes.
Well, why don't you just not hang around with them? I had to drop friends throughout my whole life. You know when I really thrived in life was way back in the 80s. I had to drop some friends. I liked them. They were very nice people. But they were all very liberal and very locked into their doctrines, and I had to leave every one of them to get away from their mentality because I knew I couldn't thrive if I maintained friendships with them. I literally had to pull them out of my being, out of my head, in order to get ahead in life. I had to dump them all, and I did. I'm at the same phase of my life right now. The few people I talk to, I'm going to stop talking to completely. Because I feel myself paralyzed by them, and it has almost nothing to do with their politics. This is another story, by the way. It has almost nothing to do with politics. At a certain point, you have to molt in your life. Various stages, people have to molt, and there's no age attached to it. And in order to do so, you literally have to leave behind you everything that is familiar. I'm very serious about that. You can do this at age 70. It doesn't matter how old you are. Just disconnect yourself from the people who you know, and you're going to meet new people because nature abhors a vacuum, Peter. You'll find other ideas, other interests, and other people coming into your life, Peter. If not, there's always toy poodles.
Thank you, Dr. Savage.
Thank you. You see that? The toy poodle. I've been joking around since the... Could you give me one sound bite that we're going to go to? This is very funny. Get me the sound of one of the kennel guy. I mean, he was so good. I loved the loudspeakers at the Westminster Kennel Club. Even though I don't like the word Westminster because it's English, I wish they named it something else like the Riyadh Kennel Club or so, whatever, anything but Westminster. Anything now with the Big Ben, the clock, anything English now, I'm boycotting. But I love the voice of the announcer at the Westminster Kennel Club, and I've been imitating it for Teddy. He loves it. And I've been telling, can you play it already? I'm ad-libbing you. Find it already.
One of the most popular breeds of all times, the toy poodle is a bred-down version of the standard poodle by way of the miniature.
You got that voice, which I love. I love the voice. So now at the end of the show at night, after I had dinner, I'm playing with my dog. I start walking around the house. I look at Teddy and I say, the toy poodle is a full dog. He is not to be treated as an accessory. He needs love and attention, but most importantly, he needs the exercise that all dogs need. The toy poodle is a loving creature. He is a friendly creature, but he is not to be treated as a handbag. Teddy just loves it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So you don't care about Wisconsin, you don't care about Tel Aviv, Cairo. No one cares about anything. There's an apathy, there's a general apathy. People are exhausted. They just don't give a damn about the news. They don't care about anything. Well, they don't really. They care about their own ids. We're running on id fumes in America. We've all become the id. We're generating by our own pleasure principle. Let's put it to you that way, to go into a Freudian analysis. It seems that America has become increasingly generated only by what's in it for me. Can I eat it? Can I make love to it? Can I wear it? Beyond that, I don't think there's much of a care about anything in the country, by and large. Yeah, there's some. The Tea Party people are doing a great job. But how much can you do when you realize that you have a government stacked against you? You got murderous gangs killing cops on the border, and you've got a human being running the Department of Homeland Security saying that the border's never been more secure. You've got a military in Afghanistan when we need it on the Mexican border. You go up and down the list. You've got a lying incompetent in the White House, and the people put up with it. Even the mainstream media knows that he's a lying incompetent. Even they're alarmed by the fact that he's bypassing them with his silences, and he's going to social networking in order to get out his lying messages. But, you know, it's a too little too late already. So that's why I'm going to the coach thing, which is I'm going to be a life coach for you since I have common sense. So let's take a caller out of West Virginia. Paul, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, do you think I'm going crazy? Because I talk to my dog all the time, and she listens.
Well, hold on. The question is, are you going crazy because you talk to your dog? The answer is very straightforward. No, you are not crazy if you talk to your dog. However, my friend, if you start hearing your dog answer, I would suggest you see a psychiatrist. You know, it doesn't matter if you talk to her. That's fine. But if you hear her answering you, and it's become like a cartoon, like an animation, like Francis the Talking Mule, and you actually hear her saying, Paul, here's what I think you really got to do, buddy. Then I would really, at that point, call 911. So, I mean, when you talk to your dog, what do you ask her? Do you ask her questions, or you just talk?
I just talk to her like she's just another person, because most of the people I talk to are such idiots, it doesn't...
Yeah, that's right, exactly. So, you know, do you explain to your dog what you're doing when you're driving around?
She goes with me everywhere, and she sits in the seat next to me.
I understand, and they act like they know what you're saying. They're such good actors, dogs. They're amazing. They look at you like, man, no kidding, it's hard. And they give you that face, the sympathetic eyes. What kind of dog is she? Golden Retriever?
Soft-coated Wheaton Terrier.
And what, when you talk to her, does she look like she understands you?
Yes.
Yes. So let's say you're driving around. What kind of car or pickup truck?
I have a van.
A van. Is it blacked over? Are there windows in it? Or you have handcuffs attached to the doors? Or?
Well, no. Actually, a lot of the times she will actually get on my lap and she makes me roll the window down and she hangs out the door.
All right. Thank God. I got a little worried for the minute. So it's not a van without windows and there's no handcuffs attached to the door handles inside. Okay, good.
No, sir.
Okay, so she's just it's a normal guy with a dog, and you talked. When you drive around looking at things, do you tell her do you share your observations with your dog?
I'll tell her, hey, I think you ought to look out the window right now because there's a dog.
No, but I'm saying, let's say you're in a car and you see like a weirdo or a nut walking by. Do you say, look at that idiot? Do you ever say that to your dog?
No.
How about if you see a gangbanger walking by with pants underneath his behind? Do you ever ridicule the gangbanger to your dog?
Well, yeah, I'll say...
With the window rolled up, of course. I'm not... I've been playing a game with my dog in my car lately, which is when I get near the house, within a mile of the house, he also likes to sit on the armrest in between the two seats because he's small, and he likes to, like, navigate and look. So I say to him, Teddy, do you know where we are? He starts looking around. I said, could you get home from here if I put you out of the car? I would never do it. And he looks like I say, okay, do you know where you are? Would you know how to run home from here? I'm doing like crazy stuff. Like, you go straight up this road. What else, Mike? You get to the corner, you turn right. Then, Mike, what do? You turn left. Then what? Turn right. I mean, I don't know if he could run home. I mean, you hear these miraculous stories in the movies. I don't know if I ever let him out of the car. I think he'd be lost. He wouldn't know where to go. I'd like to believe he could find his way home, but I'm not sure. But to this day, he hasn't answered me, thank God, Paul, because if the day he starts answering, you won't be hearing from me anymore.
Savage.
Hi, this is Mike, the Life Coach. So nice to be with you this evening. I hope you're enjoying the show thus far. Well, putting aside all threats from the Muslim Brotherhood and from the meddler in the White House, we're putting aside the thuggery of the unions, George Soros's megalomania and desire to take over the world. We're putting aside all the temporary problems of the world, and I'm going to answer your questions. Are they sexual in nature, financial, personal? Is it a problem with your boss? Is it with your husband? This is Mike Savage, Life Coach. Wisconsin Shannon, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I need help with the fact that I'm a hardcore Democrat. My husband is a hardcore Republican.
So what's the problem?
Well, every time there's something going on in our state or federal, like right now the situation in Wisconsin, it sparks huge arguments between the two of us.
So do what women have done for centuries, withhold sex.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Why?
We have a six-month-old baby, so it doesn't happen very often anyways.
Well, that's what babies are for, aren't they? To keep the husband away.
It's the best birth control ever, that's for
absolutely.
Sure.
I mean, one of the reasons women used to have babies every year or so was to make sure the husband left them alone. Well, I don't know what the problem is. You're not going to change his mind. He's not going to change yours. You're a communist and he's a Republican. What are you going to do?
Is there any way to, like, even it out some?
Well, I mean, is there any way for him to reach you with any reason? In other words, if your state is broke and bankrupt and the governor's asking teachers to pay a small amount towards their own pension and their own health care, does that not make sense to you? Where should the money come from? Where should the money come from?
There's other ways to cut spending.
Wait, hold on. What do you mean there are other ways to cut spending? Why is it that people who work for a private company contribute to their own pensions and their own health care, but government workers should not? Is that fair? You're a Democrat. You're a fair-minded Democrat. Why should state workers be exempt from sharing the burden of supporting themselves?
Teachers don't make very much for wages.
A very good point, but neither do people in the private sector today. At least they have a job in teaching. They have a job that's secure. That's better than a lot of people who don't have any job at all.
Understandable.
You see, Shannon, things have changed. The world is not what it was when your parents were alive. Thank you for the call. Oh, does that husband have trouble? I see there's no way to reason with people when they make... Salt Lake City, Ryan, what's your question for Dr. Savage?
Hey, Dr. Savage. I'm 33 years old. I have a bachelor's degree, but I'm thinking about going back to get my MBA. I just don't know if it's going to pay off in the long run if I spend the $50,000 to get the MBA. Is it going to pay off for me later on?
My suggestion is forget the MBA, spend $400 on a life coach degree and become a life coach. You'll make more money faster.
That could be true.
I hear people are doing it. They're actually paying some people money to get some kind of like experience in being a life coach. How the heck can you become a life coach if you haven't lived?
Yeah, I don't know.
What are they going to advise people of if they haven't gone through it themselves? Now, as far as an MBA goes, I don't know. There was a time when it was a union card to a job in a corporation. Do MBAs really teach you today what you need to know in this economy? I can't answer that question. Do you have a family business, perhaps, that you're thinking of taking over? Or you got to create your own business?
Well, as of right now, I'm already employed, and it's always kind of been a dream of mine to be an entrepreneur and maybe start a business. But
Then why do you need an MBA? An MBA requires a good idea, some money, and the ability to go ahead and do it. You don't need an MBA for that. I mean, you need to know the basic principles of a business, marketing, etc. You need to know how to do that, but I don't know that you don't need a degree for that today. You could go on the internet right now and you could run a search that says what do I need to know to run a small business? Give me 10 steps. You can probably find it in about 30 minutes.
Yeah, and that's true, but I mean, if that doesn't work out, if I need to, you know, lean back on a larger corporation, will it give me a
head? All right, that's another point. In other words, if you're looking to tomorrow in a more competitive marketplace, the MBA certainly would distinguish you from an applicant with an ordinary bachelor's degree. In that regard, yes. I'm always for that higher degree if it's from a decent university, and that's what you want. If, on the other hand, you're looking really to be an entrepreneur, you've got to think about what your best ideas might be. you know, the old statement, build a better mousetrap and people will be the door to, a path to your doorstep. It's still true, by the way. It is still true. In fact, even in a down economy, people are still spending money, right?
Right.
Okay. So it's not like suddenly no one's buying anymore. They're not trading like oyster shells for their dinner. They're spending money. So if you put out a better product in a restaurant, people are going to go to it at a good price. Or whatever your, I don't know what your ideas are. You have to start thinking about your ideas rather than the degree. I'd put my ideas ahead of my degrees. Then I'd worry about it. You could hire an MBA to be your partner. Hire an MBA who killed himself for 3 years and make him the CFO and give him a piece of the business. Let him figure out all the angles of the business if you have a good idea. And you could buy you could sidestep having to go to school.
All right.
I know some of the people I know who are the most successful, whether they be in the media or in business, never even went to college, by the way. And they are multimillionaires because they had a good idea and they were willing to invest their own time and energy and build that business. And it could still be done. As I say, even in a down economy, there are products that have not yet been invented that people who are looking for a way out of a down economy would, if I was hungry for money right now, I could come up with five ideas to get people to follow me right now and to give them the hope that they might find the way out of the morass they're in. I wouldn't do it because I don't want to exploit anybody. But there are ways that you can come up with ideas every day of the week, Ryan. Good economy, bad economy, it doesn't matter.
All right, thank you.
Anyway, so the bottom line of my answer to you is this. If you're thinking of security and you want to go in a big corporation, yes, go for the MBA. If, on the other hand, you have a better mousetrap that you want to put out and market right now, go to work with an MBA. Make him your CFO. Give him a piece of the business. If he thinks it's good, give him a percentage and let him go out and raise the money and go sell it. Thanks for the call. I'd like a sex question right now. Oh, here we got one here. Alabama, Elaine, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Michael. My husband has not made or shown any interest in being intimate with me in 4 years or longer. And every time I pinpoint it and sit him down and question him about it, he will start cursing me and just jump up and leave the room. Mm. And so I was wondering what your...
How many years have you been together?
31.
Well, look, I don't want to make any jokes about it, but, you know, the romantic phase ended a while ago, correct?
Well, you, with me it was forced, but...
With you what was forced?
Well, it was forced to end with me because he's not interested. And I'm not about...
Well, hold on. So what is the basis of your relationship if it's not sexual? What keeps you together at all? You have something in common. There must be some reason. Is there a companionship element to the relationship at this point or not?
We're good friends.
Are you good friends? Do you fight all the time or do you actually enjoy your company with him other than the sexual loss?
We enjoy each other's company other than that.
Well, let me tell you something. Elaine, you know, there's a little wisdom in what I'm going to tell you. You ask anyone going back any period of time, and they'll tell you that any long-term relationship primarily has to be based upon companionship. If you've got that, you've got 95% of the package, Elaine. A lot of people have sexuality. They have no relationship, though. They have no companionship and no care for each other. So sometimes you have to take what you have. I know the other side of you is dying. That's another story. I can't answer that one because I don't know what the dynamics are between you and your husband.
It's your opinion because I sure don't.
But what I'm going to say to you is, without being a wise guy, is if you have kindness between each other and you enjoy each other's company, instead of approaching him with, why aren't you making love to me? Why are you rejecting my advances? Why don't you try to emphasize with him how much you enjoy being with him, and put that aside for a while. Don't even think about it. Try to put it aside because he'll pick up the vibes that you're not approaching him to go to bed with him. You're approaching him because you like being with him, and maybe that will come back again. You know what I'm saying?
I understand.
That's how I would approach that. Now, I thought that was a very sensitive answer from Dr. Mike. I think it was very touching. I thought, see, I'm doing a very good job, better than most psychiatrists. They would tell you to meet him in a motel and get ropes and, you know, get dirty movies. I mean, I'm not a psychiatrist, so I don't think that way. I know how they think, though, because I read enough of the newspapers. You know, you ever see these articles you see in the paper? How to make your sex life more interesting. I mean, it's like a trapeze act. meet him in a motel outside a racetrack and bring clothesline. I never saw anything like this. If you have to do that already, what's the point? You may as well join a nunnery rather than do that. So what I would say is forget the sexuality and work on the companionship and the kindness. See if you can enjoy each other. That's all. So I think that was a very nice answer. I'm very happy with it. I just got an email from a friend of mine who's very important, and he said to me, show is perfect, makes us happy for a few hours. You know what? At the end of the day, that's important too. You want politics, you can get it from morning till night with people spewing their political ideas. Al Jazeera, Al Jazeera, unions, thugs, doctors, nurses, therapists arrested for Medicare fraud, all aboard. This came out of ABC News this morning. Doctors, nurses, therapists arrested for Medicare fraud. Federal agents raided healthcare facilities in 9 states this morning, arresting dozens of suspects believed to be defrauding Medicare of tens of millions of dollars, ABC News has learned. Pre-dawn hours, and 100 doctors, nurses, therapists, and healthcare company executives stealing tax dollars to the tune of $200 million in recent months. Raids conducted in Brooklyn, where else? Miami, where else? Miami, Brooklyn, Tampa, Chicago, Baton Rouge, Houston, Dallas, and Los Angeles. What happened is physical therapy clinics in Brooklyn, New York. The clinics were set up to bilk over $50 million out of Medicare and Medicaid over the last 2 years. How did it work? The Brooklyn scheme worked like this. Patients willing to go along with the scam were paid $40 per visit for 3 appointments per week and were often diagnosed with vertigo or other ailments that would limit their mobility. Ambulettes provided by Medicare and Medicaid were transporting these patients back and forth for fraudulent appointments. I heard this from a doctor 20 years ago. I had a urologist tell me that they were in the ambulette racket 20 years ago. He was afraid to tell anybody because he was afraid he'd get whacked. 7 of the 9 Brooklyn suspects are in custody. ABC producers on the scene saw that some of the suspects being read their Miranda rights in Russian. I'll leave it at that. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Throw in a news story here. I want to show you what happens when you have a Marxist president who's weak and cares only about advancing internationally his agenda. Obama the meddler. Baghdad wants U.S. to pay $1 billion for damage to city. You hear this? Baghdad, Iraq, wants U.S. to pay $1 billion because we damaged their city. Now, what's interesting is I say that's a good idea. I agree with them. I'd say that's a very reasonable request from Maliki and the other Iraqis. And I would say, yes, we'll pay you the $1 billion, for sure. But let's deduct that billion first from the $1 trillion that you owe us for liberating you from a dictator that you despised. And then at the end of that $1 trillion, after you take off the billion, how much do you still owe us? And you could pay us an installment starting with oil, you bums, you. This is what happens when you have a weak president. We should have taken the money out of Iraq in oil. We should have taken out of them an oil from day one. Imagine, of course, when you have a weak Islamist for president, this is what you're going to get. They want reparations now for liberating them. Why not? Why shouldn't they ask if they have a Obama in the White House and Hillary Clinton in the State Department? Why not ask? They can only say no. They know the old racket. Ask for $1 billion. You might get $100 million that you can send to Switzerland. Now we'll go back to irregular programming on the Savage Nation. Any other sexual questions? Get me some old man asking me the difference between Levitra and Viagra or something like that. I don't know if I could even take this much longer. I'm getting so jaded from this old deal here that I'm ready to take the cloth and join a monastery. You know, I was thinking about this last night. I'm trying to, think about, charities that are worthwhile to give to and all. It's very hard to even find a charity anymore to give to. You start looking into everything. It's like you don't know where to turn anymore. The salaries of people who run them are so high, you don't know if the money's going in their pocket or to actually do the good work. Then you say, all right, I'll give some money to an orphanage. There are no orphanages. You know why there are no orphanages in America to speak of? Because the state has become the orphanage. There is so much money in child care for the state. And, of course, where would the Department of Children's Services have their victims if the state didn't have the control over them? So as I say, you can't even find an orphanage. This is how I started my thinking last night, that the world isn't the world I grew up in. when I grew up, there were orphanages, there were nunneries. In other words, like the Salvation Army guy in the street with the bell was an ex-alcoholic who you could trust if you threw the money in the jug, that it wasn't going to go, you know, into a bottle of booze or to go to Thailand for a sex trip. You don't know anymore. You don't even know if you throw the buck. I throw money in Salvation Army. I still do. I don't know those guys. But by and large, you don't know which way to turn. Nothing is what it appears to be anymore. We're running on like the fumes of the 50s in America. But you can't trust anything in that regard. You don't know what to do. So you say, all right, so why give any of it away? You have a little extra money, spend it on yourself. I don't want to spend it on myself, the extra money. Whatever I have left after taxes. I don't need very much. I have luxury items. I don't even use them. Do you know that? It's a weird thing. I hardly use anything that I own. That's why I don't want any more of them. So the question is, what am I working for? For the betterment of mankind or my own ego? Well, as the Bible says, all is vanity. I agree with that. It must be vanity that drives me. What makes me get up in the morning and do my show? Vanity. It's only vanity, right? I don't know. Do I care anymore about America? Yes, I'll tell you why I know I care. I got so angry yesterday reading about Obama and what he's doing to this country and what he did to the Middle East and how he gets away with it. I started to fume last night. I could hardly calm down. And I was starting to think there's only one thing left in my whole life that I want. I don't think I'm going to do it, though. It's not that I'm too old. There's only one thing that I thought's worth doing, and that's creating the Nationalist Party. I toyed with it a few years ago. Then I got sidetracked by the socialist communists in England. They threw me off for 2 years. I've been tied up spending hundreds of thousands of dollars and a lot of my mental energy on it. I'm involved in other legal problems. But other than that, I may have formed a party by now. You say, well, what's the point of forming a third party? You're only going to suck votes away from the Republicans. Good! Good, suck votes away from the Republicans. That's what the Tea Party's wanted to do. But there's no Tea Party party. That's the problem. And I feel that with my audience and the readership I built up over these 16 years now, I could control 16%, 10 to 15% of the vote in terms of a party. We could suck 15% of the vote out of the population, maybe more, because many people are independents. The largest majority of Americans are not even party affiliated. And I believe my message is so strong, and it's very simple, borders, language, culture. That's it. Borders, language, culture is my message, and I think it resonates with the American people. So I said, well, why don't I create the Nationalist Party? It's the only thing that's burning in me to do to save this country from the two-party system, which is fundamentally a system set up to advance the interests of the parties. Of course, within both parties, there are decent men and women. But by and large, the parties exist for their own advancement, not for the advancement of America, which is why we have been out-traded and why we have so many problems today. So I said, if we created the Nationalist Party, and I was the brains behind it, well, then what, I have to become a community organizer? I'm going to run around with a staple gun and start from ground zero? I said, I don't want to run for office. You got to understand something. There's a difference between being the architect of a party, okay, and running for office. I don't want to be a congressman. I don't want to be a senator. Let me make that very clear right now. Never. I don't want to be a politician. But on the other hand, I still think creating the Nationalist Party is a good idea. And I could probably do it. I could raise a ton of money. Within 6 months, I could probably raise probably $100 million by what I see going on in this country. I could put together a team. I could organize it. I could create a very viable party, a third party, I'm saying to myself. And the only answer, by the way, is to get control of the political system. Look at what Obama the Destroyer has done in only 2 years. Look what he's done to this country. Look how he set the world on fire with his communist ideology, I say to myself. Somebody has got to step up and counter the damage, I said to myself.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Listen up. Now, there's a big story emerging. We know what's going on in the Middle East. It was all started by communists, funded by George Soros and others, in my estimation. Jimmy Carter's hands are all over it. The same Jimmy Carter who told us to embrace the Muslim Brotherhood, which wants a Muslim caliphate around the world, and would like to annihilate all Jews on earth, wipe out Christianity, take over Europe. But what you don't know is that there's a lot of silent leftists behind these movements who in some ways may be well-meaning and in other ways may not be so well-meaning. I found one of them. I did a lot of research over the last day. This man is extolled by the left in many different ways, and they've been writing articles about him. I'll give you an example. Shy U.S. intellectual created playbook used as in a revolution. This was from February 16, 2011, which was yesterday in the New York Times. The Daily Beast wrote a glowing article about this old man called Profile of Gene Sharp. The next article, interview with Gene Sharp from the National Catholic Reporter. Blind Faith in American Militarism. People Must Know They Have Power, Associated Press. Egypt's Youth Build New Opposition Movement, The New Yorker. And they're all talking about the godfather of the nonviolent movements around the world after Gandhi. Lessons from the Godfather, interview with Gene Sharp. How George Bush Rejected My Sharp Idea for Countering Terrorism by John Horgan. How to Get Rid of a Dictatorship. Well, you go down the list. The Christian Science Monitor glorified him. Iran protesters, the Harvard professor behind their tactics by Scott Peterson. Revolution of the Mind, blah, blah, blah. An Inconvenient Man. You go down the list, and they all glowing, quiet Boston scholar inspires rebels around the world. Now, you may say he just wants to simply overthrow dictatorships and replace them with democracy. That's all a very well-intentioned purpose. We understand that. Show me where that's worked. Have you seen dictatorships recently overthrown that have been replaced by nice, decent democracies? Have you seen that change take place in China, Burma, Syria? Where has it taken place? Well, you say it just took place in Egypt. Who's replaced Mubarak? You don't know yet, but it may be a worse dictatorship, correct? And so, you know, this goes back to the old adage, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Watch out for liberals. Again, many of them are nice people. They mean well, but very often the roads they pave are paved with very good intentions, but they all lead to hell. This guy, Gene Sharp, runs a crackpot institution out of his house called the Albert Einstein Institution. And what's it about? It says the Albert Einstein Institution is a nonprofit organization advancing the study and use of strategic nonviolent action in conflicts throughout the world. Sounds good. We're committed to the defense of freedom, democracy, reduction of political violence through the use of nonviolent action, blah, 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 and so forth and so on. But if you read his work, you find out he actually, although he says he has no hand in it, you find that he actually, people around him anyway, trained the Egyptians. In fact, there's an article today on CNN entitled Gene Sharp, How to Overthrow a Tyrant. Gene Sharp, senior scholar at the Albert Einstein Institution. He is the Albert Einstein Institution. And, of course, it's in his house. He's 83 years old. He, of course, taught at Harvard. He, of course, taught at Harvard. That's where they all the commies work. And he poses as a man of nonviolence and nonviolent action. What you just saw in Egypt and going on in the Middle East, would you say there's nonviolence? The rape of the news reporter, that was not violent? See, all of these groups claim to be nonviolent, but in fact, they claim they're bringing down an autocratic leader or dictator, but often they replace them with more autocratic or more dictatorial leaderships. So watch out. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. They ask him questions. How much did your own experience in lunch counter sit-ins, get it? Or your activities as a conscientious objector, inform the guidance that you've given to others? Well, who is this man? Well, he's involved with the Egypt's movement. He's trained them. Activists in Egypt went and consulted with him. And one of his students became a millionaire. He ran a Cairo workshop. His name is Peter Ackerman. See, Peter Ackerman. Of course, Mr. Sharp has a long beginning. He spent 9 months in a federal prison in Danbury, Connecticut in the 1950s as a conscientious objector during the Korean War. Oh, I see. Now, while his little house doubles as the headquarters of the so-called Albert Einstein Institution, he ran seminars, of course, at Harvard. He taught at the University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth. And you can read all about it on michaelsavage.com. They say some people suspect Mr. Sharp of being a closet peacenik and a lefty. You see, in the 1950s, he wrote for a publication called Peace News. He was once a personal secretary to A.J. Musty, a noted labor union activist and pacifist. But he says, no, I've outgrown my pacifism, and I'm now transpartisan. He believes in revolutionaries like Gandhi. As you know, Gandhi was a very peaceful man, caused the death of 1 million Indians. But he was peaceful. That's the important thing. He wore a diaper, and there are statues built around him. Well-intentioned. The good news is that Hugo Chavez hates him. That's good. I haven't seen any peaceful movements in Venezuela, have you? No. Well, anyway, you get the picture. You get the picture. None of these things happen by themselves. What happened in Egypt, what's happening in the Middle East, did not happen by itself. And now on to the news of the day, tied directly into it. Wisconsin, liberal state. They changed leadership. They were going broke from the socialism that had emerged. They put in a Republican governor. The Republican governor came along and he said, okay, we're going broke. Let's clean it up. We need a new budget repair bill. First of all, I want all state employees to pay about 5.8% toward their pension. That's about the private sector national average. And then I want state employees to pay 12% of their health care benefits. That's about half the private sector national average. And what happened? The Democrat thugs, the union thugs, first of all, the teacher thugs, all did not go to work today. They brought their stupid students out into the streets. That's number one, because they don't want to contribute to their own pension health care plans. Okay? Number two, the Democrats refused to even vote on the new plan. They left the state. They're hiding. That's what's going on in the United States of America today. The unions are out of control. They're communist thugs. This is a big topic. Question to you, should state workers pay any percentage of their health care and pensions? Duh. Anyone say no out there? Did you hear the other big story? Attention, Jews. Yes, I'm sorry. I have to say it again. Attention, liberal Jews. Your friend Barack Obama, who you love so much, is going to rebuke Israel in the United Nations Security Council for the first time in American history. This is the first time this has ever happened. You know, normally it's the U.S. and Israel abstain, right? Not anymore. Now Obama is joining the Arab League to protest Israel for their settlements in the West Bank. Now, what kind of message does this send at a time when revolts are being fueled by anti-Israel factions across the Middle East? Also today, connections between George Soros' International Crisis Group, Jimmy Carter, Zabrinsky, and the rebellions in Egypt and Algeria have been proven by newly revealed documents. What does Soros hope to gain from chaos and caliphates in the Middle East? These are some of the questions on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Here we are on the Savage Nation. We are astonished that Jimmy Carter is permitted to continue to front for the Muslim Brotherhood. And tell us that we have nothing to fear while they themselves tell us exactly what they intend to do and that Hitler was a great guy and that things of that nature, which we've quoted, and I don't want to repeat myself over again. Why has Obama said nothing, not one word? Why has Obama, who was given a Medal of Freedom Award to one of the worst poets in the history of the world, I wouldn't even call her a poet, Maya Angelou, why is the man who's taken time out for such a disgrace and an abomination not said one word about the Iranian democracy movement? Where is the U.S. government with the Iranian democracy movement? Why is it that Obama, who encouraged the overthrow of Mubarak, has nothing to say now that the Iranian people need their help? Why is it that Obama has nothing to say about Syrian warships passing through the Suez Canal, which is an open provocation of Israel? Why, oh, why, oh, why? I guess you don't have the answers because you haven't even read the question. So we're talking about these and other topics right here on the Savage Nation. Carter says Egyptian military is a good group, and that we have nothing to fear from the Muslim Brotherhood. And yet the Muslim Brotherhood itself has a dear abbey or a spiritual leader, as reported in Der Spiegel. He is an 82-year-old disseminator of hate. He quotes the Quran. He gives advice on breastfeeding, which I will not repeat on this show. He advocates establishing a worldwide united Muslim nations. He hates Jews and would love to take up arms himself. In one of his sermons, this man of peace asked God, quote, to kill the Jewish Zionists, every last one of them. Well, in that regard, he's no different than American leftists. And he said this in January of 2009. Again, this is an 82-year-old Muslim voice of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood. He said, throughout history, Allah has imposed upon the Jews people who would punish them for their corruption. The last punishment was carried out by Adolf Hitler, close quote. 84-year-old man is the president of the International Association of So-Called Muslim Scholars and the so-called European Council for Fatwa and Research. He has written more than 120 hate-filled books and penned countless hateful doctrines, which he distributes internationally via his website. Der Spiegel, as you well know who they are, says he is a blend of a pope and service hotline, a spiritual dear abbey for all instances of doubt in Muslim life. So this is the sheikh now that is the sheikh du jour, a sheikh no doubt that will be invited to visit the White House very shortly and perhaps advise the Department of Homeland Security on how to be more sensitive. But the TV imam shares some very dangerous ideas, does he not? And Carter says we have nothing to fear from these people. And, of course, our president has nothing to say about the Muslim Brotherhood now that he has helped engineer them into power. But why is there no talk about the Iranian uprising? These are some of the topics that I think are worthy of your attention and worthy of our discussion right here on your local affiliate on the Savage Nation. Let us go to the callers right now. Let's start with Chicago. Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Doctor. It's an honor. I apologize. I'm very nervous because it's the first time calling you. In regard to what you guys are just talking about, basically, it's very obvious that what is going on. Obama has removed blocks of people that have traveled that were not allowed to travel into this country. The no action is laying a foundation for a slow takeover, and I think that his silence dictates what his desired result is.
Well, and many of us feel that he is, if not sympathetic, outright sympathetic to radical Islam. There are those in a more extreme category who believe he's actually a sleeper president.
Yes, and in regard to Israel, I understand. I'm Jewish myself. I'm a Jewish conservative, so I'm the hit of my dinner table at times. But, you know, they bombed Iraq in the early 80s, which basically knocked out Iraq's nuclear capability or delayed it.
It was a very noble flight in an F-16 provided by the United States. And the pilots were amazing, and they came back with almost no fuel. But they have done nothing for America since then. It's all been a one-sided game. Now, things have changed, Jeff. Unfortunately, it's a zero-sum game with Israel right now. And Israel today is not the Israel of Moshe Dayan and Golda Meir. It's a whole different country since the Russians were admitted into Israel. You ask any Israeli, it's a crime-ridden nation. It's as corrupt as any nation on earth. So let's not put it into a citadel for all of us to look up to.
Not referring to that, just trying to address your comment. They did draw fire during the Persian Gulf War with those Scuds, and I think we all know that Israel could have taken out more than they did.
Israel was not even involved in the war. They were told to stand down for fear of instigating the Arab nations, and they did nothing. Unfortunately, they played passive. I'm not saying they couldn't have engaged, but they didn't.
Right.
A lot of people in this time are saying we should cut off foreign aid to all countries, Egypt, Israel, as the two biggest recipients on top of the list. I have a different opinion on that because most of the so-called foreign aid to Israel actually comes right back to U.S. Munitions manufacturers. They don't understand that. When we say we give them $3 billion in aid, most of it is in the form of military weaponry. It's not in the form of cash. And so, in other words, the money actually goes to the companies that make the bombs and the planes. In that regard, I don't see it as a loss.
Keeping jobs here.
Well, okay, but so I'm not against that. On the other hand, I don't want to glorify Israel and turn it into something it isn't. It's a group of Mediterranean people who are trying to survive like everybody else. But right now we have tens of millions of Americans who are out of work, who are worried about tomorrow's mortgage payment and putting their children through college, and they can't be concerned about Israelis anymore. That's the actual reality of it. But having said that, compared with their neighbors, Israel is a saint compared to devils surrounding them, in plain English. The way I put it to some of the leftist vermin I've met in my life, years ago when I'd bother even talking to the vermin at Berkeley, is this. I would say, you hate Israel so much, and you're so in love with their Arab neighbors, let me ask you a question. If you were an American without a passport who was plunked down in any country in the Middle East, which country would you rather be plunked down in without a passport, knowing you'd be interrogated by that nation? Where would you rather be put down? In Tel Aviv, in Lebanon, in Egypt, in Syria, in Jordan, and so forth and so on? I think I made my point. Las Vegas, Sherry, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Michael. The reason I'm calling, this is unlike what the group of the media, they say this is a domino effect to Iran.
But why is it the American media that made believe they were so interested in the Egyptian uprising have nothing to say about the Iranian uprising? Why is it that fraudulent metrosexual from CNN who talked about having his hair messed up has nothing to say about Iran? How does he get away with this?
Exactly. That is my point.
I am furious at these people in the media who pretended to be so brave in the Egyptian uprising, linking their arms with the Muslim Brotherhood. Yes, I got to move on. I thank you very much for the call. The Middle East is on fire. Protests, riots. Just back from a trip to Israel to tell us what's going on is Eric Stackelback with an exclusive interview on what he saw happening for the Savage Nation.
Michael, always a pleasure to be here, and I just returned from a 9-day stay in Israel. And what a time to be there, Michael, with obviously this Egyptian revolution going on in the Middle East, and many other Middle Eastern regimes feeling the heat, these mass protests in many Middle Eastern countries. So to be in the Middle East, in the heart, really, in Israel, and observing this was a very interesting experience. And while I was there, got a chance to talk to several senior-level Israeli officials about the state of affairs in their country and in the Middle East and the nature of the threats that are gathering. And as you can imagine, Michael, the main topic of much of our conversation was the situation in Egypt, where I was just standing a few hundred miles away from Cairo, where I was in Israel. Basically, in talking to senior-level Israeli officials all last week in Jerusalem, Michael, they are uniformly pessimistic. The big winners here, they feel, are the Muslim Brotherhood and Iran. You know, one Israeli official was frustrated. He told me, look, the whole world, including the U.S. administration, is euphoric over the possibility of democracy in Egypt. And the Israelis are looked at as party poopers, he said, because we're the only ones urging caution here. Basically, Michael, throughout this process, the Israelis have acted like the adults in the room. And they know the Middle East. They're there. They have to live with whatever comes out of this Egyptian revolution. The Israelis have to live with it. It's right on their southern border. And, Michael, I can tell you, from talking to Israeli officials, they think this is going to end badly. And me personally, as an analyst of these events, I think it's going to end badly.
Why do you say that?
Basically, one Israeli official laid it out for me like this, Michael. He said, Egypt can go one of three ways right now. Number one, it'll be a military dictatorship. Number two, it will develop into an Islamist adversary, kind of in the Turkey model, where hopefully the military is the only thing standing between the regime and all-out Sharia law. And they would take power with the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt through elections, just like the radicals in Turkey took power in 2002 and gradually chipped away at Turkish institutions. So that's a second option, a Turkey-style model in Egypt where the Muslim Brotherhood is in control and they're hostile to Israel. The third option is the nightmare scenario, an all-out radical jihadist state run by the Muslim Brotherhood in the mold of Iran. Basically, all three options are horrible for Israel and America. The post-Mubarak era will not be pretty. There is simply no way, Michael, that this is going to end well for America and Israel. In the post-Mubarak era, we are far worse off than we were with Mubarak. Not a good guy, Mubarak. Repressive at home, absolutely. But you know what? He kept that 32-year peace treaty with Israel. A cold peace, but he kept it nonetheless. He cracked down on Hamas. He opposed Al-Qaeda and Islamic jihadists. And he was a pretty loyal ally for all his faults, and they were many. He's about as good as you could get in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
To think that democracy will flourish in this country, which has had 5,000 years of autocratic tyranny, is a pipe dream. The Israelis see that clearly. In my conversations with them, you know, one counterterrorism official, former counterterrorism official, said, look, there's no way the Muslim Brotherhood doesn't seize power. He thinks it's not going to happen overnight, but it's got to happen. The Brotherhood or some like-minded Islamists are going to seize power. Here's the reason. You see these protesters in the street. You see a lot of young people, and they're talking. Some of them are talking about democracy and freedom and free elections. They were united in the fact that they didn't want Hosni Mubarak. Everyone could agree they didn't want Mubarak. But what most protesters couldn't agree on is what they wanted after Mubarak. They have no idea what they want now. But the Muslim Brotherhood is the one force in Egypt that knows exactly what it wants. It's organized, it's large, it's influential. They've been planning for this moment, Michael, for 70 years. This is a golden opportunity, and they are not going to let it pass them by. The Brotherhood will be cunning, they will be patient, and they will be stealthy, but they will advance.
Hmm.
You're going to have elections in September. Now, basically, the Brotherhood is saying they're not going to run someone in presidential elections. That's pretty savvy of them and pretty smart. But gradually, just like we saw in Turkey, and actually, Michael, how we saw in Lebanon with Hezbollah, when Hezbollah, the terror group, started taking part in Lebanese elections in 2005, they won several seats in the Lebanese parliament. Fast forward now to 2011, Hezbollah controls Lebanon. Last month, they dissolved the government. Hezbollah effectively controls Lebanon.
Right, right, right.
I see the Muslim Brotherhood moving in a similar direction in Egypt, where they're going to participate in free elections. They're going to put the moderate face on in the public and make like that they're going to work with other secular parties and opposition parties in Egypt as part of a governing coalition. But eventually the Brotherhood, with their power, with their influence, with their clear goal, their single-minded purpose of establishing Islamic Sharia law in Egypt and around the world, I might add, they eventually will prevail and become the power brokers in the Egyptian government. That's my feeling. I know that's a feeling in Israel. But again, none of this ends well for the U.S. None of this ends well for Israel.
Oh, I agree.
Here's another scenario, Michael. Al-Qaeda establishing a base in Egypt. The Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda have had some differences over the years, but only over strategy, because Al-Qaeda thinks the Brotherhood's moving too slow. Again, they're very patient, very stealthy. Al-Qaeda has a win-now strategy. They want to blow you up right now, whereas the Brotherhood said, look, we'll be more stealthy, we'll participate in the political process, we'll get there. Al-Qaeda, we have the same end game as you, Sharia, the reestablishment of a worldwide Islamic state or caliphate. We agree on the goals, we just differ in tactics. But the Brotherhood would gladly put that aside, as would Al-Qaeda, if Al-Qaeda could establish a base in Egypt. And look at that Sinai Peninsula, Michael, between Egypt and Israel, which Israel gave to Egypt in the peace treaty that was brokered with Sadat in the late 70s. Egypt handed the Sinai Peninsula back over to Egypt. That's a largely lawless place, that Sinai Peninsula. Bedouin raiders and brigands run wild in the Sinai. That could really develop into a trouble spot. Egypt patrols and controls the Sinai. That could develop. It's a desert region right to the south of Israel, in between Israel and Egypt. That could develop into a real trouble spot.
This is unbelievable to me.
And other than the Brotherhood, the other main beneficiary here is Iran. Already, Iran has been crowing. If you've been watching news reports over the last 2 weeks, Iran has been crowing about this, saying this is great for the Egyptian people. It's a new Middle East, a new day for Islam in Egypt. Iran is crowing about this. They see a golden opportunity as well. Iran is spreading its tentacles throughout the Middle East, Syria, Gaza, Lebanon, Yemen. Iran is everywhere, and it's almost, Michael, like a pincer movement forming around Israel. That's exactly the intention. Now Iran, not even a week after Mubarak stepped down, Iran is sending ships into this through the Suez Canal and into the Mediterranean Sea. Reportedly, Iran will be sending two warships through the Suez into the Mediterranean as a direct provocation to Israel. The stakes have been raised very high. Iran is feeling its oats right now, sowing its oats, feeling very good about itself. Egypt, which was a major Iranian rival, Mubarak, the Iranians, no diplomatic relations for the past 30 years, did not get along. Mubarak's now gone. And the Iranians see the possibility of a jihad Iran-friendly Muslim Brotherhood coming to power. And we can't even consider the fact that the Brotherhood is Sunni, Iran is Shia. Throw that out the window.
Why?
Hamas, which is the Brotherhood's Palestinian branch, Iran is their biggest benefactor, biggest funder. So yes, Iran will work hand in glove with the Muslim Brotherhood. So Iran will also have a base in Egypt. Already they are trying to spread their influence in that country, Michael, I can guarantee you. And I reported exclusively just about 2 weeks ago on CBN how Iran is trying to establish a Red Sea base.
Oh, my God.
They'd like a port in the Red Sea to further project their power, menace Israel, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, their regional rivals. They're trying to establish a Red Sea port in Sudan. Where is Sudan? Just south of Egypt. So you could envision a scenario where Iran is using the Red Sea to transit money, weapons, fighters even, from Sudan into Egypt to their friends in the Muslim Brotherhood. You could see this all playing out. We see it all lining up right now. So Iran and the Brotherhood are very, very happy right now with what's going on in Egypt.
Why is the Obama administration seeming to ignore the danger of the Muslim Brotherhood?
The Obama administration truly believes they can work with the Muslim Brotherhood. I think that they believe the Brotherhood is actually a moderating force, because if you're not blowing somebody up, you must be moderate. That is the Obama administration's take on Islam and jihadists. They don't see the Muslim Brotherhood as a threat. Jimmy Carter, who is Obama, is his heir apparent politically. Jimmy Carter yesterday said, no, the Brotherhood is not a threat. We have nothing to fear from these guys. This is the mind frame on the left. This is their mind frame. And it's no coincidence, Michael, when I was in Israel, spent some time in East Jerusalem, the Palestinian area, actually interviewed a Hamas official there who was kind of under house arrest in East Jerusalem. Long story. But he made it a point to tell me that Jimmy Carter had recently visited him.
What?
Big surprise. Jimmy Carter visiting with a wanted Hamas terrorist. That was probably the least surprising revelation during my trip to Israel. But, Michael, the three big things to keep an eye on here right now. We know about the Muslim Brotherhood, number one, but also Iran. Watch for Iran's moves in Egypt. The third thing to keep an eye on, another disturbing recent revelation, Michael, is the Obama administration's behavior at the UN.
How come?
Apparently, the administration is considering supporting a UN Security Council resolution that would condemn Israel over settlements, over so-called settlement building. This is an unprecedented move. This would be an unprecedented move by an American administration were Obama to do that. I believe he will do it. And it's interesting, Michael, because when I was in meetings with some senior Israeli officials in Jerusalem, we asked them, the group I was with, we asked them, hey, what do you think about the White House's support in the UN? Can you guarantee, do you feel confident that the White House will continue to back Israel unequivocally in the UN? They answered yes, but not without some hemming and hawing. You could tell that they were uncomfortable and that there is a lack of confidence on the Israeli side that they will get U.S. backing at the UN. And obviously that lack of confidence is well-founded. Obama has shown again and again that he does not like Israel. The man is not fond of Israel. This is the most anti-Israel American administration in history, and that's saying something when you had the likes of Jimmy Carter once holding the Oval Office.
Exactly.
So Israel is rightly concerned about what's going on at the UN. So that's the third thing we need to watch, Michael. It's kind of a backdrop to what's going on in Egypt. Watch what's going on at the UN, and also watch these moves by Latin American and European countries to unilaterally recognize a Palestinian state. They're basically declaring that they recognize a Palestinian state, even though there is not a Palestinian state. No such state has been founded or formally declared, but there's going to be a real push at the UN in the coming years, in the next year or two, to say, hey, forget negotiations, forget all that, forget the quartet, all that nonsense. We're just going to impose a Palestinian state upon Israel and upon the world. That's another thing to watch for.
Thanks for the update, Eric.
Michael, thanks. Always a pleasure. And you can watch my show, Stackelbeck on Terror, at cbnnews.com. New episode, February 22nd, featuring some really good clips taped in Jerusalem. Thanks again.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Sacramento Peter, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage. I enjoy red wine, you know, quite frequently. And I was wondering, what is too much red wine? And is there something I can do to kind of protect maybe my liver or something I can take?
Well, you're asking the right person, first of all. The simplest rule of how much is too much with alcohol is, do you get a hangover? That's your bellwether. I mean, if you have two glasses and you're more or less the next day don't have a hangover, it's not too much. But if you have three and you get a hangover, that's too much. You want to use simple terms. I think that's the best way to determine it on your own without going to a doctor. So how much can you drink?
Well, 3-4 glasses.
Wow. So what? And what, no hangover the next day?
No hangover, no.
So what are you worried about? Who told you to worry about your liver?
Well, I've just started ultrasound program, diagnostic ultrasound program, and I see so many patients that come in with cirrhotic livers, and it's like you start getting paranoid a little bit, you know.
Well, do you have any indication that you have a cirrhotic liver or any kind of what's your SGOT level? You know, does your doctor say your liver's compromised in any way?
Oh no, not at all. No, I see these people come in. It's like,
people vary all over the map. Look, the British Medical Association wants to define moderate drinking as 5 ounces a day. The AMA keeps changing it from 1 to 1.5. I mean, no one believes any of that. It's not a science at all. It's all a guess. And the individual has to know virtually how much they have. I mean, there's some common rules, which is try to eat something while you're drinking, number one, so that you're absorbing it at a different pace, and also drink a lot of water. And I certainly believe in megavitamins as well. Now, if you have any doubts about liver function, you have to get liver function tests. And then if you do show some sign of early liver function damage, or certainly you want to cut back on your drinking, and you want to take milk thistle. Milk thistle has been proven to not only aid the liver, but also to regenerate liver cells. It's astounding. I used to do this for a living. So you can look into that. But, you know, the quality of the products out there varies all over the map. I used to tell people, you talk about herbs and what to take. You know, not all herbs are alike. You know, there's a difference in a Mercedes 600 and a Yugo, so to speak. Okay, it's the same with herbal medications. You got to know where the Mercedes is and who makes them. And I'm not going to give the name of a brand. You'll have to do your own research. But the Germans did fabulous work on the medical properties of milk thistle. Look it up. And you cannot believe some of these studies. Well, you should believe some of the studies. Milk thistle, the plant, in extract form, will regenerate liver cells. I know many people don't believe it, but check the medical literature. It's astounding. You know, you don't read about it, so you figure it's not true. You didn't see it in the daily news, so it can't be true. There are many things you can do, but the old adage of everything in moderation, I've modified. My joke all my life has been everything in moderation, especially moderation. Because I'm not a moderate person. I'm not a moderate person at all. And I sometimes move very, very slowly, and I don't look like I'm moving quickly, but my mind is always racing, number one. And number two, I'm always working on something. And number three, I mean, I lead a very high-stress life. And I've been, I think, very lucky that I'm still living, given my genetic inheritance. owing to a lot of factors, not the least of which is diet and exercise and tremendous amounts of vitamins. I mean, I drink consistently. There have been days I haven't had a drink, but usually I drink every day, and I don't say I drink moderately. I don't know what you call it, moderately. I mean, sometimes I want one beer or two beers. It's all I'm very lucky. I know what alcoholics go through, and I'm not an alcoholic. An alcoholic has no way to understand when they've had enough. I am very lucky. I've been told this by many people who are alcoholics. Try it on yourself. If I drink one or two drinks, there are days I can get a feedback, a taste. It's enough already. I can feel it. An alcoholic has no such feedback mechanism, and they will drink and drink and drink, ad libitum until they're sick, until they're stumble-bum drunks. They have an illness in that regard, and that's a sad thing, but they should never drink. And people who can control it, meaning some days you feel like having a drink, so you have a drink or more than one, and then the next day you have a hangover, so you don't drink, or you have a beer and call it a day. Or when you're drinking, if you start to get this feeling like it's enough, so it's enough. And you stop. It's self-control. This is sort of a rambling answer. You don't have to read a scientific publication on common sense.
Savage.